It's a site for buying and selling cryptographic hashes. I can't think of anything that would make me a bigger nerd.
Well, hash isn't nerdy.
You're listening to The Job, a talk show about design, music, business, culture, and Portland, featuring interesting interviews with interesting people, brought to you by your pals that need more designs. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, and this is episode number 9. I'm Ray Briglib, and my guest today on the show is I should have edited this a little bit better. Okay. I'm Ray Briglib. My guest today is Hutch Harris of the Thermals, whose new album Desperate Ground has just dropped on Saddle Creek Records. Go pick it up. While you're spending the best $9 you've ever spent, let's chat with Candace here in the studio. Hi, Candace.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So when you get this album, are you going to get the record or the CD?
I'm going to get the record because I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that the digital download comes with it.
Ooh.
I love when they do that.
Both.
Yeah.
I might be mistaken, but I think you have the choice, or they might be sold out now, but they were, the first ones were red, the records.
Oh, red vinyl.
Yeah. And I know how interested you are in multicolored vinyl.
I like colored vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, hopefully I haven't missed all of that, but you know, I'll have to go check.
Well, you better check before this podcast goes out or there'll be a stampede.
Yeah, I know.
The red one.
Like insider information.
Shh. So did you get to hear a sneak peek? Sneak listen?
I did on the website, yeah. Well, and also that their video is out, that song is off the off the album.
Pretty excited.
Yeah, no, it sounds good. It sounds really good. I'm excited to hear the rest of it. Yeah.
When is the first time that you saw the Thermals play? How long ago was that?
Well, Candace. Probably whatever they formed the band.
So more than 10 years ago.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
God, is it really?
It has been that long.
Yeah, I'm putting together my notes. I know I was at the first show, and I remember because the drummer at the time, Jordan, opened for the band, and I remember thinking, this guy has stamina. He like played an entire show of just him on the drums.
Oh yeah, he wasn't the drummer then.
Of the Thermals?
Yeah.
He was.
Oh, okay.
So he played a whole show of just by himself. His band Opera Cycle was just Jordan playing drums with like some tape loops. And then 10 minutes later, played drums for the Thermals for like another hour. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I just saw him the other day.
Is he still playing?
I think he's... I don't know. I have to check his LinkedIn profile. He's he's settled down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have anything else to tell folks about what's going on in the studio since last week?
Oh, goodness. So much.
We've just been totally nerding out.
Nerding out, yeah.
Literally been doing the most nerdy things possible. Like we did accessibility training yesterday for...
Well, that I found really interesting.
Yeah. And I'm going to buy some Bitcoin.
Okay, yeah, that's the nerd. That's the nerd.
That's
part.
The nerdy one? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Ray. Where do you think Bitcoin comes from?
The future. That you set me up. I have a theory that someone from the year 2041 specifically traveled back in time to 2008 to invent and propagate this currency, spent 2 years doing that, and then traveled back into the future where they were comfortably, incredibly wealthy.
Do you know,
like, enough to buy, like, nations, entire nations?
Do you know why I love this theory of yours?
Why?
Because you can never tease me again when I'm reading my horoscope. It's like you have crossed the line.
I'm going to sell the rights to this story, and they're going to make a movie out of it.
Mm. Ray, it's going to be like Looper. Did you invent Bitcoin?
No.
Was it you?
No.
I'm secretly hoping that you're the person that came back from the future, and that in the year 2040, we are just all of a sudden loaded.
Yeah. Well, you'll be really old by then.
Oh, that's so harsh.
But yeah, we will be loaded. That's kind of a lousy retirement plan. But I guess if you could jump back ahead in time again.
It's a great retirement plan. Mm. Just enough to get the yacht.
The yacht. Where are you going? Are you just going to walk away while I'm introducing the guest?
I was just going to sneak
just
away.
Hang out. Yeah. Just out of respect. Right. It's like one more paragraph.
I can hear you.
I might edit a little bit of this out.
Sure.
Our guest today is Hutch Harris of the Thermals. Hutch is an amazing singer, a terrific musician, and would have made a brilliant comic if the whole music thing hadn't worked out. Yeah, so in case you were wondering, mm-hmm. We're just doing a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, I checked it out on iTunes. Yeah, cool. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Excellent. So I'm going to go way back.
Okay.
Just, yeah. We got a little time here. Where were you born?
Me? Yeah. I was born in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah, I lived there for 8 years.
Okay.
And then
the first eight?
What's that? Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah. And then moved to San Jose when I was eight, because my dad got into. He worked for like startups in Silicon Valley.
Really?
Yeah. He actually worked. I don't know if you remember. Is it called?
I probably.
Yeah, it's called Syntelligence.
Oh no, I don't.
They made. Keyboards.
Though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so many companies that were gone so quickly.
Yeah.
But he. I wish I knew. You know, I've never done electronic music, but. There are some like famous keyboards that are still used that Syntelligence made.
Huh.
And I see them now. They're like these cool retro, you know, because now they're like almost 30 years old.
Now they're probably collector's pieces in some museum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So is Hutch your real name?
It is.
Okay.
Hutch was my mom's maiden name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so all my relatives on her side, their last name, you know, it's like the Hutches, you know, those are my cousins, like Tom Hutch and Jane Hutch.
Okay.
It's from Uchi. It was changed by Italian immigrants from Uchi to Hutch to sound more American.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How do you spell Uchi?
Just U-C-C-I, like Gucci.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so how did you... I'm sure you listened to a lot of music in high school, but how did you get into playing?
My dad's a pianist.
Okay.
He was always trying to get me to play instruments. I played saxophone. I played piano as a kid, hated it. I played saxophone, kind of liked it. I got a guitar when I was 14, loved it. And then, yeah, so my dad was always encouraging me, so it was easy. You know, I just asked my dad if he'd buy me a cheap guitar, and so he bought me a guitar when I was 14 and then loved it, just kept playing.
Do you still play cheap guitars, or do you play like fancy music?
I do still play cheap guitars.
Yeah.
I got my first fancy guitar this year, but usually, I mean, whatever. I mean, the first guitar I had probably cost like $60, so I guess I play slightly better cheap guitars now.
Yeah,
I don't need anything.
Let's
fancy,
go up
really.
To three digits in the price there. Did you originally start recording? Around that time, were you comfortable with recording? Is that something your dad was
not,
into?
No, not so much. He, you know, like in New York, he had done like off-Broadway stuff, and then he had done like industrial shows. And then he was making money doing auditions with people. Like he would go with singers to auditions and, you know, kind of like you know, people were always like rehearsing for their auditions in our apartment, and then my dad would go with them and play the piano with them. So he was doing that, and then like, you know, before he got a real job, and then, you know, he was doing like off-Broadway stuff.
That's crazy. He went from that to Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, he was getting his master's at Columbia for engineering.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, I didn't start recording till probably when I was 17 or 18. Probably when I was 18, got a 4-track, and then started recording.
Like a Porta Studio on that. Or something.
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course.
Oh yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Still have it. I still have. Right now, I have 4 4-track cassettes and 2 8-track cassettes. I only want more cassette machines. I don't ever want to get rid of any of those. I love those still.
Does this have such a nice sound?
Yeah, yeah. I still use them all the time.
Do you ever listen to a band called Medicine?
No.
Like, I think the guitarist in that band, it was like a 80s indie. They were like America's My Bloody Valentine. But the guitarist, check out Medicine.
I'll
put it in the podcast notes for you.
Okay, cool.
But he would run his guitar through a Porta studio, like as part of the chain.
Love that.
And it got the most like hissy, sound.
Rad.
Yeah.
You know, I actually, when we just recorded last year for the newest record, I love that vocal sound I get from the 4-track. So I just brought the 4-track and the cheap mic that I like and just did kind of the same thing. I just sang through the 4-track and that, you know, went to tape.
Nice. But okay, let's get back to your dad. No, okay. I'm just kidding. So how long have you known Kathy?
Kathy and I met just after high school. So 19 years,
okay.
19 or 20. You know, this is my 20th high school reunion is this year.
Uh-huh.
And I can't believe it's been that long. And I got an email about it, and I was like, what, the 20th? I was like, are we planning for 5 years from now? And then I was shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it in Portland? Did you go to school?
No, it's in San Jose.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So Kathy and I moved to Portland 15 years ago. We moved here in 98. But yeah, we both graduated high school in San Jose.
Are you going to go to that? I mean, isn't that what Facebook is for? Do you still got to go?
I'm not going. Yeah. I actually did go to the 10-year. You know, I have another old friend, my friend Jeremy, who lives here. And he's like the only other person I went to high school with who lives in Portland. And we, for so long, you know, our friends were going to the 10th. And we were like, no, we're not going. Fine. And we did go down. And I mean, it was all right. The people that we want to keep in touch with, we keep in touch with.
Exactly.
And it's actually more than you might think. Like I still keep in touch with plenty of people from high school, but yeah, I don't need to go down for the 20th anniversary or reunion.
Yeah. So how did the thermals come about?
Back to the 4-track. The thermals started on a 4-track cassette just at my house. Just recording songs in my kitchen.
Just kind of restlessly recording.
Kathy and I were doing the band called Hutch and Kathy, you know, quite different, you know, still a rock band, but a lot mellower, acoustic guitars and drums. And, you know, this was kind of just a little project that I had just started doing, just writing songs and doing just songs one at a time, writing a song during the day. You know, it was when I was working at Stumptown.
Yeah.
I would get off at noon, usually go home, write a song, record that song, you know, write the whole song and record it in one day.
Right.
Which became like that was the method for that whole first record, just me at my house. So, you know, it wasn't incredibly labored. It was just, you know, it was something that just was very easy and fun.
When did the name come? Was that part of the project or just you needed something to call it when you'd put a dozen together?
You know, I remember like brainstorming names. When Kathy and I were doing the band, I wanted to turn it into something that sounded more like a band. I didn't want to keep calling it Hutch and Kathy.
Right.
So I feel like during that, you know, somewhere between Hutch and Kathy and the Thermals, I just started brainstorming names. And to me, the Thermals felt very Northwest to me. It made me think of like grunge in the 90s where people are wearing like thermal underwear under their, you know, you have like cut off jeans and
Then
have like, you know, like thermal leggings on. So that like in my mind, and then
They still do that in Minnesota. I was just in the Twin Cities, and they're still
cool.
Doing
it. Yeah, cool.
So there you go.
I think the 90s are fun. You know, now that it's like 20 years, like 90s can really come back now. So all that great stuff, like Flavor Savers and, you know, Dreads, I guess. Yeah.
So I have at least one vinyl pressing of yours that... of you yourself that predates that. What were you doing before the Thermals yourself? Were you not recording as Hutch Harris?
There was a band called Urban Legends that Kathy and I did.
Oh, that might be what I'm thinking
of. Okay. Yeah. So, and that it was something that kind of went through a bunch of different, I don't know. I mean, there wasn't like one single sound to it. There was some loud stuff and there was some mellow stuff. That was just kind of like the name we use. Not very long, maybe like a couple years. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kathy and I had a band called Hala. Like, I feel like when we were really young, we could never have a band for, like, to have a band for 2 years was crazy. That was like so long. It was just always about like moving on and making something. I mean, really, I guess it makes sense that, you know, once we had the Thermals, we really had like all the success that all the other projects never really knew. So it made sense to like move forward with it. Yeah, and not just like toss it out so quickly.
Right, and that makes sense. You always hear about bands, kind of going through that, like sorting themselves out, shedding a few skins.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like even the Beatles and Velvet Underground and Grateful Dead, all these like huge bands, they all started as something else and they had a different name, and you know, eventually you find what works the best.
Yeah. Has your recording process changed a lot since you were just recording that first thing with a 4-track? Does it?
Now we go to studios. So, you know, back then it was just always at home with the 4-track. And maybe, you know, I mean, I love the studio, but it's so expensive. So you're always just trying to get in and out as quickly as possible.
So, like, for example, you don't have the luxury of writing a song in the morning then spending the evening recording.
Exactly.
It's
more like
you got to come in with a set.
Yeah. So, you know, we're just doing both now. Like, we still demo all the songs on a 4-track, and I'll use that to write lyrics. And, like, that's a good way. I love, like, recording on the 4-track at home because it's just good practice. Like, I'll just practice singing those songs as I record them. Yeah, now it's really, when we go to the studio, it's all about like knowing exactly how everything is going to go, so that because you're just paying for it when you're in there.
Right. How long does it usually take to record an album for you in the studio?
It's like, it's usually like a week and a half of tracking and then another week and a half or two of mixing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you usually get to... is it up to you where you're recording? How you find a... where you decide where...
Yeah, well, so... the most recent record that we made, the producer John Agnello, I got in touch with him. He's in Jersey, so he records mostly in New York or New Jersey. And then so he suggested this studio, Water Music, in Hoboken. So we went there. But the previous record was at Jackpot in Portland. And then the two previous records before that were both in Oregon City at Supernatural. Okay. So really, I think Jackpot, I just knew because it was famous, just a famous Portland studio. And the Oregon, Supernatural, I actually don't remember how I heard about it, but it's nice too.
Yeah. When you started out, when you put together a band, I guess, for playing those songs originally, it was a 4-piece. It seems like you guys have settled on a 3-piece as your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Do you ever miss the 4-piece? Was there a...
Yeah, I do. I mean, I miss... It's just less work for me. Singing, you know, just singing and not playing guitar. And sometimes I think maybe we'll do that again. There's something really nice and respectable about being a trio. But I do miss, like, just singing.
There's more... Yeah.
It's just... The thing is, like... When you're just singing, you really have to, when you're not singing, you got to make sure you're doing something and you have to keep it interesting. When you're playing guitar and singing, like, you're either doing, either playing or you're playing and singing. So mm-hmm. there's no, you're no like, you're never like, oh, am I entertaining enough? Or
you don't need to have like a little sort of dance or
something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or should, do I need to like, you know, climb the scaffolding or jump in the,
exactly.
you know, jump in the audience? And that's great. But really, like, it is a lot of work just singing because you really have to be on, you know, the whole time. And, you know, we used to joke when I was a younger, I grew up kind of like, the scene I was in, it kind of like wasn't that cool to have just a singer who just sang. And we would always call it the useless lead singer. And, you know, we like bands like Pearl Jam, but we would look at Eddie Vedder and be like, come on, like, why don't, like, pick up a guitar or something. But that, I totally changed, you know, the way I feel about that. But I mean, you know, Nirvana, like, you know, was obviously like a, you know, a band that we all looked up to. And that seemed like perfect. It was just three of them and they were really cool. And Green Day too. You know, there's a lot of bands that like, just like the less people doing a lot with like less people.
Yeah. I thought I remember Nirvana, someone saying that they were about to join that band. Like they were going to have a fourth member or come in saying intended on it, but never got around to it.
Well, you know, they had other guitarists come and go. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's the guy who's on Bleach and then Pat Smear joining. And it was cool, but it was something like really cool when it was just the three of them too.
Yeah, absolutely. They certainly had a good sound. Did yeah. Have you ever listened to... I've been meaning to ask you this for mm-hmm. a long time. Have you ever listened to The Clean?
Yes.
New Zealand band?
Yeah.
There's like this... Awesome. There's like this... I don't remember the album. Like, it's another one-word thing. It's like Big Cat. Do you know that song?
You know, I don't know. I have that anthology that's kind of like a greatest hits. There's like 40 songs or something on it.
Okay, it might really be on good. That.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, you sound like this New Zealand band sometimes.
Yeah, it's cool. I feel like there's so many bands that like sound like them. A lot of bands sound like them that aren't really as cool. But yeah, I really like that. It was actually Kathy had that, and she turned me on to that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you've been doing a lot of touring. I guess you're in town for your little press tour now.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're touring, what do you do with your time? Like, how do you... I've always wondered, like, what do you do all day? You know, are you, like, just waiting for the venue? You sound check, and then you just have, like, hours to
I mean,
kill?
Driving. Mostly in this country, we're driving all day because everything's so,
so fucking far away.
Yeah. What's great is, you know, we rent these Sprinters now. We don't take our van out anymore. So for the past, like, 4 or 5 years, we'll just rent, like, a large Sprinter. And they have Wi-Fi boxes on the top of the van.
What is
and
this?
What, saved.
Is a Sprinter a kind of a van?
Yeah, it's a Mercedes makes them. And then I feel like one other, I feel like maybe Dodge makes them. But you've seen, you know, it's like the delivery vans, like the Euro style delivery vans. And there are like normal, there are like smaller ones, and then there are larger. Like the ones we take up probably seats like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's like 9 or maybe 11 passengers. They have like captain's chairs, and I mean they're like really cozy. It's much better. Huh. It's like in between your basic like shitty van and the tour bus,
right?
You know, so you're not on the bus, but it's not nearly as expensive. There's a company Bandigo that just rents Sprinters and maybe regular vans, but mostly Sprinters to bands. So ever since you got like internet while you're on the road, like that. Saves everyone's life.
You know?
Sure. No, you know, seriously.
So it has like Wi-Fi built in.
Yeah. So you get it most places. If you're, you know, when you're in like West Texas or Wyoming or some, you know, some areas, you're gonna lose it. But overall, so then you can do your email and you can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. That's pretty.
And
cool.
There's like video games and like TV and stuff. You know, it, just as long as no one has to read a book. It's funny because this is what we used to do. Everyone used to read books all day.
Yeah.
You know? So this is, you know, this is what the future looks like.
So, as you mentioned, you used to serve coffee. Have things changed a lot over the past, you know, decade? Like, You feel like the same person, or you just feel like, I mean, do you still drink good coffee?
I still drink Stumptown coffee every day.
Okay.
Like, seriously, every day.
You bring it on tour?
I do, yeah. Okay. I do, yeah. It's funny, we just went down to California, and we did bring it. I still love coffee more than anything else. And I haven't been drinking alcohol because it's like really hard on my voice. Mm. And we just did South by Southwest, and I had remembered like a previous... time there, because you know you're doing like 2 or 3 shows a day, and then you know it's really easy to just drink and party all night. So I was like, and I remembered a previous year where I had really lost my voice, and I really didn't want that to happen again because it's terrible. You know, you still do the show, but it just sucks. You know, and if I went and saw a band and just the singer couldn't sing, I'd be like, dude, like
asshole.
Figure this out. So I stopped. We've just been playing so many shows, and I have not been drinking, really just to, you know, just to save my voice. But instead of looking like, oh man, I can't wait to have a beer, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
There always has to be something, you know, some kind of delicious addiction.
Sure.
Coffee is something I don't have to give up.
Do you get a chance to like cook when you're on the road, or are you just eating?
No, yeah. No, not at all. So at home, yeah, but not, not at all. You know, the more I feel like Trader Joe's has saved us and Whole Foods has saved us, even though it's like so expensive.
It seems like going down each of the coasts would be reasonable, but then there's like this gaping fucking middle section of America where it's just like you could be driving for like days.
Yeah. But it is getting slowly, it's getting better. I remember, you know, when Kathy and I were touring well before the thermals. Mm. And sometimes, your only options were fast food or like something at a gas station. And you didn't have a GPS or a smartphone or anything that would find you. You know, you can find a co-op, actually. And in a lot of places where you would think there's nothing, even in, like, South Dakota or, like, just seriously, like, middle of nowhere, there will be something healthy.
Yeah.
And now you have, like, the tools, you know, like, on your smartphone to find it. So that makes a huge, huge difference.
Where is the nearest co-op?
Yeah, I forget what, you know, our girl who does sound for us, I can't remember the name of the app, but it was a find vegan food app. And I don't need to find vegan food, but wherever the vegan food would be, they're just like healthy.
It's a good lead.
Yeah, it would take you to some like a co-op or, you know, somewhere.
How many people tour with you, is it?
It's, for a while it was 6. it changes a lot. The most is 6. So it's just like the 3 in the band, someone selling the merch, sound, and then tour manager / driver. But we've gotten away with like 4, and that is fine too. It depends on how crazy or how busy the tour is going to be and how long it's going to be too.
Do you guys like just drive each other fucking crazy?
The internet in the van. Seriously, it's the pacifier. Yeah. Seriously, you know, it's something that everyone can just zone out. I mean, that's what television is for a family. You know, something that everyone can just zone out on and get your brain sucked out, and you don't have to pay attention to each other.
Don't you worry about social media corrupting us?
Yeah, I mean, I do at some points, but you know, what the other thing is, you're going to kill your whoever you're closest
right,
to.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah, so, yeah. So it's preferable.
Yeah, there's no perfect
outcome. But I mean, like, so a lot of your themes in the songs that you're writing are religion, politics, big things.
Mm-hmm. Violence. We like violence a lot. Yeah. War and death and killing.
Violence, yes. Yeah. I've seen the new video.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you, besides the tour van, where do you get inspiration for these?
Film a lot. And, you know, the new video, is very violent. And this record specifically, we wanted it to be really cinematic.
Uh-huh.
We wanted the songs to sound not like the soundtrack for a movie, but like the movie itself. Like, we really wanted to make a record that was really like an action movie just in the form of a rock record.
Okay. How did that idea come about?
I wanted to, you know, we like there to be a theme for each record that the songs are, we like to tie all the songs together. We don't want the record to be just a random collection, you know, just all these songs that happen to be written at the same time. We want there to be a theme and like a loose story, but really just something that ties them all together. And so, you know, I really wanted to write something about war, but not any specific war, about more just like the urge that people have to kill each other, because people are constantly killing each other, and especially here in this country, mm-hmm. we're just like very obsessed with violence. And so I just thought that would be interesting and entertaining. You know, violence, there's horrible violence in the world all the time, but at the same time, we're like so obsessed with like being entertained by violence too. And it's not like a statement on that. It's more like we just wanted to be part of that as well.
Sure. Just be a part of the discussion. Now, do you feel like that's a net positive for the band to talk about that kind of stuff? Do you think that's what your fans are looking for?
Yeah, I do think they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the songs and the records that people most like from us have been that. I think like The Body, The Blood, The Machine is like,
yeah.
I would say like people so far, like the favorite record, you know, I think most people would agree on that, like fans of ours, that they like that record the best.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is the most like crazy, like violent record that we've made.
Yeah. Do you ever worry that, like, I remember like after the, like one of the, I mean, there's been a lot, but there was like a school shooting.
Yeah.
And then I saw, was that movie about like time traveling gangsters? You see that movie?
Wait, no. Wait, it's not Gangster Squad, is that?
No. It was the one where like someone would appear and then.
Oh yeah. No, I did see that.
Yeah,
Bruce Willis.
Yes.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But what is the name?
Okay, we'll remember it.
Okay, yeah.
At some point here.
Yeah.
Maybe Karina knows, but we were watching the movie and it was like right after like the shooting and like this Bruce Willis goes and he's like shooting children.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself the same thing I thought when I saw that video. Like, is this going to make people not want to watch the movie? Or is it going to make them feel more engaged with the movie? I think it probably made them feel more engaged.
Yeah.
But it's always hard to tell. It's kind of like with touchy subjects like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like if you write a book about religion, I don't know, maybe the fact that there's a new pope becomes like, gets people talking about your album or something. I don't know.
I mean, you have to risk it. You can't. Especially since, like, you know, our record was, we're working to change, you know, our record was finished before Newtown. And, you know, I have relatives that live in Sandy Hook, you know, right by Newtown, who were, like, themselves affected. And for me personally, I was like, I wasn't like, well, I hope no one's offended. I was like, I hope my aunt and uncle specifically aren't offended by this record. But, the thing is, the band is not selling millions and millions of records. A lot of people, mainstream people who don't pay attention to underground music, they're not going to see the video. They're not going to hear the record. I think if I was, if we were like Coldplay or Rihanna or someone who's like a worldwide celebrity, I think you probably have to pay a lot more attention to stuff like that because the whole world is watching what you do. But for us, you know, you kind of have the luxury of flying under the radar. You don't have to. I mean, I don't know if I would feel differently, but I mean, for me, like, you know, and for us, like, we're not going to change what we're doing. Like, and if, you know, you don't want to hurt people's feelings, but also like a lot of people will, you know, they, you know, if they see it, you know, fuck, I don't know. Everyone has the option to just not pay attention to what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. As a musician, how do you feel about the album, like the record, the LP that we grew up with versus Pandora?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about like the direction that, you know, all of this is taking?
I like both. I still, like I was saying, you know, we still think of the album as one piece, as, you know, a thing. Like, mm-hmm. as long as, I mean, labels still want you to do a record. Like, it's hard. Like, I did this other band, and I just did singles. And it was like, you definitely couldn't get the press to write about it the way they would if you did a full length, because we're still just like stuck, even though like we're so obsessed with singles, you know, as the, in the culture, like really the album is still like what you do. It's kind of like still the rule. So as long as we're doing, you know, if a label came to me and said, hey, don't do a record, why don't you just do some singles this year? I would be fine with that. But you know, every label we've worked with, they want a record and from that record to come singles. So we're just, you know, still doing, everyone's still doing both. I love stuff like Pandora. I love singles. I love the radio. So I think the important thing is to make a good record where all the songs are connected, but also, you know, within that, there have to be good singles. And also, you know, I'll only speak for us now. You know, I wouldn't say everyone has to make a record with a theme and stuff, but like, you don't want to go too far with that. You don't want there to be songs that like have to depend on one another on the record. Like, you need to write good enough songs that any song could get pulled off the record and still work just on its own.
Right. I mean, there can always be a surprise hit, I suppose, on an LP think it's going to, you know. Do you still think of it as like side one, side two?
Definitely. Yeah. And we've always, I feel like we've talked to other bands or other people about this, and they kind of feel the same way, that the side two is usually the darker or more introspective side. Some, you know, the record should take a turn. And even if, you know, the majority of people are going to be listening, you know, on a CD or just on their, you know, on a device, we still like to think of where's the end of the first side and where's the beginning of the second side, because it's just nice. It's nice to have two, you know, like chapters to the story.
Like, it reminds me a lot of, I mean, like, the stuff that Bowie did, like, you know, like the Berlin trilogy. Like, it was always like the front side was like rock and roll hits, and then the back side was like, what the fuck is
totally,
this?
Totally, yeah,
like,
yeah. So it's really cool, yeah, yeah.
That's like the extreme, I guess.
Yeah, but I feel like that's a really good example. Like, yeah, side two is the place. Yeah, maybe side two is just one crazy long song, or it's just like a place. I feel like Pink Floyd did, you know, some of the, you know,
right.
on some of their
They
records
literally
too.
Would have a side that was
yeah,
one
yeah,
song.
Yeah, 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 totally, yeah. I think, is Echoes just on Metal? I think that's just one song on that second side, right?
Yeah.
So that's great. Yeah. Side two is where you're just allowed to just go off the deep end.
Yeah. It's like the chef's table, I guess. Yeah. As someone who shares a love of comedy.
Yeah.
David Cross.
Mm-hmm.
It's a random question, but I've been meaning to ask you this. Are you excited about the new season of Arrested Development?
I really am, yeah. Because, you know, it's good that... I don't know if the movie's coming still, or I forget what, but I know about Netflix making the episodes. I think it's great, because so many times a movie of, like, a sitcom or a sketch show is never as good as, like, episodes. Like,
oh, yeah.
Something, the format, and you keep it that same short length. And that, yeah, to me, I mean, I've loved so many things David Cross has done, but Arrested Development specifically, it's so rewatchable. They're so dense. You can go back, even if, you know, and Kathy and I have watched, you know, all those seasons just multiple times, because they're just, it's brilliant.
Yeah, they're really just dense with weird inside.
Yeah.
Jokes that you do that it rewards repeated viewing, which is good.
Definitely.
You want that in all of your media.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, Kathy and I were discussing this the other day, because we were saying it's like funny how we'll just like watch the same things over and over. And we like to think, you know, a good television show or movie is like a record too. Like, you can, you know, you should be able to just consume it, you know, repeatedly if it's good.
Bye. Yeah, well, it's that's the thing. Like, so I was really into, like, I don't know, the last album that Phoenix did.
Yeah.
But it seems like the album, or in that media or movie or whatever, is such a fulcrum of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your marketing efforts, like, so center on that it seems like Phoenix has had their new album done for like 6 months.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I've seen like leaks of it forever.
Really? Yeah.
But I feel like they were holding it deliberately until that SNL episode.
Oh yeah.
The other night.
Yeah.
And it like comes out this next week. Like, I feel like all this marketing is focused on like having just the right gigs to promote it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you worry about the fact that the single is basically gone? Like the single and the B side and stuff, or do you still feel like that's a valid art
form? I still feel
itself?
I mean, it's, I mean, the way things have changed so much, even just since we've been a band. Like, you know, how everything has gone digital. There's no... when we started this band, you know, we were still like printing like glossy photos, like the whole, the 8x10 glossy, like when we had that. Right. And then after two records, that was done.
Yeah.
And then any kind of paper promo was done and there was nothing sent now. And it's just all, there are still CD promos, but I don't know why, because everything is just like a watermarked MP3 file, right. You know, that's being sent out. So,
yeah, like my computer doesn't even have a CD drive.
Yeah.
I can't even play one.
Yeah. God, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, what another 10 years will be. It's fine. It doesn't bother me. I mean, I feel like overall, music is, I don't think it's changed. I feel like everything around music has changed and marketing has changed and format has changed. But I don't think it's affected like the way people write and what people are doing. I don't think it's affected it as much as you might think, considering everything else around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like people's attraction to music and the reason for music isn't going to change.
Yeah.
And it's still like a... I mean, like you were talking about, it's still part of a discussion in popular culture.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's like, you know, it can be top 40 or it could be, you know, indie underground, whatever. It's still like, I mean, I don't know where I'm going with that. What is a piece of music equipment that you couldn't, besides your four track,
okay,
that you could not live without when you're on tour?
It would just have to be my guitar. You know, I play those, I've always used a Telecaster. I love it. And lately I've been playing the Thin Line, those 72 reissues. Okay. Because, you know, and just, we just did this trip where we just flew, so we didn't bring any amps with us. We just would borrow amps from other bands, or the show, you know, the promoter would just have a backline brought in. You know, it's South by Southwest. We played 8 shows. We played 2 shows a day for 4 days. Every show had a different amp. And it just, and they send you the list of what they have, and usually it's fine. It's like a DeVille or a Twin, or it's usually, you know, usually they have a couple options. I always go for, you know, I don't want like a Marshall. I don't want like a Stack or anything. But it just means like, so in 4 days, I played 8 different amps. It was like, I usually don't care. It right. sounds fine. If you have, I mean, to me, it's all about, if you have pedals that you like, it'll sound, you know, similar enough. So like, so, I mean, just saying that, I could kind of take almost whatever amp. I have like a ton of amps. I could bring whatever one. Yeah. I think they are all Fenders. There's probably like, probably have like 6 or 7. Yeah, to me, if as long as I have like my guitar and my pedals, I'll play through whatever. I had, you know, we were in France and the backline blew. It was a half stack. It broke right before the show. I went direct. That was one show out of like hundreds and hundreds. I wouldn't ever want to do that again, but it was an option. You know, I just plugged her. I mean, it did not sound great, but you know, I can live with it.
Huh. What is your, this is kind of a stereotypical question, but what's like your desert island album?
It's probably The Breeders. It's either Last Splash or Pod. It's probably Last Splash. I feel like that record I could listen to over and over. It's such a, you know, it's so hard to pick one. Maybe Agent Orange, Living in Darkness, that these days I haven't listened to much besides our record when we're like mastering it.
Yeah.
And Agent Orange, and like that record, like seriously over and over again. But yeah, but like Arrested Development, I feel like Last Splash, it lends itself. There's so much weird, hidden, stony, just weirdness going on that record. I feel like every time I listen to it, like I hear something new and crazy. So that's, yeah, it's a good reason to bring that.
So you have a new album coming out.
Yes, sir.
When?
April 16th.
Okay.
Will we be out on this before that, or?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, then it has already come out on
it's
April 16th.
It's already dropped.
Yes.
Yeah. and is it, where can people go to buy it? Like online? iTunes?
Yeah.
Just look for the thermals?
It's on iTunes, of course. I would say the best place to buy it is at saddlecreek.com.
Okay.
You can buy it on our website. You can just buy it at thethermals.com. But the best place, I think, go to Saddle Creek's website. And if you just want to buy the MP3s, you know, it'll be at the same price as iTunes, but it's going to go right to us and the label, as opposed to giving Apple their, too much.
Label, yeah. Right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, Hutch.
Awesome, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Cool, easy.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Ray.
How you doing?
Doing okay. I'm doing okay. I don't know. I kind of swallowed that word there.
Doing good. I've been listening to some Ken Nordine this week.
I am unfamiliar with Ken Nordine.
Ken Nordine, born April 13th, 1920.
Are you looking at Wikipedia?
Yes. Is an American voiceover and recording artist, best known for a series of word jazz albums.
Word jazz albums?
Word jazz. I'll put it in the show notes.
Like scat?
No, it's more like he talks like a...
You played some of this. I did play it in here. Yeah.
Yeah. He talks like someone who's... I don't know. I imagine in like the 50s, he was like an announcer for like, you know, the sexy new Chrysler Sable.
He was Don Pardo?
Yeah. Like... But like more of a ladies' man. Like he's got like a super low, you know. Let's come back to my place, you know. And instead, it's more like you know, Burgundy. And he'll talk over this like sort of like mellow jazz about a color or like some weird puns that I don't understand why. He recorded these or what his deal is.
So do you enjoy listening to this or is it like,
I seriously do enjoy it. Yeah.
Curious. Okay.
He recorded a ton of these albums, but I think that at some point someone turned me on to his album Colors, recorded in 1967 when I was in my sort of high school hippie phase. And I was like, I don't know what this recording is, but it's amazing, and this guy is the coolest, and, you know, it was like the ultimate, like, sort of beatnik jazz kind of hipster.
From 67?
Well, he apparently recorded put out albums going all the way from, like, the mid-50s until, like, now.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, he was on a recently released compilation, The Best of the Beat Generation. So that's Ken Nordine. Put it in the show notes. How about you? Have you got anything cool going on there?
Oh, no. But I've been listening. Rilo Kiley had a new album that came out last Tuesday.
Okay. I've been hearing about that.
I like Rilo Kiley. It's not something I love, but I like some of their early albums. Execution of All Things, More Adventurous. Those are good albums. Under the Blacklight, which was their last album before this, the last full studio album. It's good. There's some good pop songs on it. It got poppier as it went along. The new album, I'm not so sure about. I was listening to it and it was just sort of... For one thing, they gave Blake more than one song.
Mm.
Rilo Kiley should not give Blake more than one song. He is the Ringo of the band.
Okay.
He should be allowed to play guitar. And I know you're a big fan of the Ringo songs, so maybe that's not the best.
I'm not a big fan, no.
No, but, you know, like, whenever Ringo took lead vocals, yeah. It was always like, maybe we'll skip this one.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know.
But his songs are just, like, really overwrought and, like, I don't even know what the lyrics are, but they just feel like they're going to be saturated in sentimentality to the, like, just like, ugh. Like, you just kind of feel like, dude, stop it. Leave it, stop it. Let Jenny come back up and sing. Like, and she has a good voice, and his is, like, you know,
okay,
middling.
Yeah.
So, but it's also just kind of like middle of the road. There's nothing really exceptional about it. I was disappointed.
Oh, okay. Meh.
That's the extent of my story. I was disappointed.
That's the word. Sometimes it's more fun if an album is like truly bad.
Yeah.
Did you hear that Christmas album that Bob Dylan put out?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit, that was bad.
That was a steaming pile of turd.
That was a hot mess. I couldn't believe it. I was like, did nobody ever do playback? Has nobody listened to this before they shipped it? Is it some sort of like contract, like his last Columbia like legal agreement? Got to put
this on
this
label for 50 years. Yeah. I can do what I want.
Pretty much. It's like, yeah, it's like he woke up, he just bolted up right in the middle of the night. It was like, I've never done a Christmas album. I'm Bob Dylan. I'm going to do a Christmas album. No one's going to stop me.
I have the three from my reborn period, but never really got to the holiday, the big holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. It's not quite that bad, which makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
When they're that bad, you're like, you can listen to it over and over again and be like, find the even funnier bits.
Here's another good one. Did you ever hear any of William Shatner's recordings in like the 70s, like that were on the Golden Throats or whatever? Just like his cover, his infamous cover of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, where he kind of does a Ken Nordine. He actually sounds a lot like kind of...
That's what I think I thought about immediately when you were describing his albums.
Okay. I'll have to put that link in there too, but boy... That one's like one of those, like, it's so bad, it's good. Like, you can't listen to it often, but when you do, there's a certain secret thrill you get out of hearing William Shatner.
When he first started doing is it Priceline that he does commercials for? Or
yeah.
When he first started doing those, he was doing, like, sort of spoken jazz with Ben Folds playing piano. And he was like...
Just as a separate project or for
No, as for the commercial.
Oh, okay. I never saw that.
Early commercials, he was just like...
Interesting.
Singing about Priceline. Leonard Nimoy has an album of like where he reads poetry.
Yeah.
Over music.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's also terrible in a wonderful way.
And what amazes me is everyone's all one of those guys. You'll just find out they're, and it, maybe it's has something to do with having been on Star Trek, but they're huge in social media, like.
George Takei.
Yeah, George Takei is like the king of Facebook. Like I think 10% of the messages I see on Facebook are just him being reposted by like everyone. And like William Shatner is like totally into Twitter these days. Like just seems weird.
Will Wheaton, former Star Trek alum, he's millions of Twitter followers.
He's a little guy that was the boy or something, was he? Yeah.
Yeah, on the Next Generation, I think.
I always get his name confused with the guy who produced sci-fi TV shows.
Oh, like Buffy?
Yeah. Who did those?
Why am I blanking?
Well, I don't know why I would associate those two. Anyone?
Give it to the room. Okay.
What
is his name?
Joss
Whedon.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. They do kind of sound similar, so I'm not crazy. Okay. I don't know where I'm going with that. Yes.
Just to totally switch gears.
Sure, sure.
Because I talked about Fugazi last week.
Yeah.
Today is Ian MacKaye's 51st birthday. I just saw while I was eating lunch.
Wow.
On Facebook.
That's crazy.
Is so far removed from how I would experience his life 20 years ago. Felt very odd. Like I was eating a salad, reading Facebook on my... Oh, happy birthday. Counterculture icon. Like it just gave the world the
phrase between your microgreens.
Like,
reading Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You were having an interesting conversation with someone at that party this weekend about Twin Cities music, weren't you?
Yeah,
I kind of vanished.
Missed his name completely.
I don't recall his name either.
He saw a lot of music in the 80s.
I know, more than me, and I lived there.
Yeah, he was like, he saw the Replacements basically on every tour they did after, Tim or something, I don't know. No, before that, probably. But that's he was just great. Like rattling off all these, and I was like, He mentioned at one point he saw a show where they were just like, it was here in Portland. It, I guess, spawned, you know, sorry, Portland. They just did the show in their underwear. And, like, at one point, like, Tommy just fell off the stage and they just kept going.
Oh, vintage replacements.
And
it sounds and like one of their shows.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it was just everything was out of key. And, but, and Husker Du, we saw a bunch. And, yeah, he was just.
Who probably really did not go up in their underwear and fall off the stage. There's a study in contrast, those two. I mean, you know.
Speaking of Twin Cities music, I saw on the telephone pole outside of my building, Soul Asylum was coming through town. They're from Minneapolis, right?
They are. I never cared for them.
They had that one, like, was it like, I just remember the video had, like, pictures of Runaways in it, like, with numbers and their names. I have no idea what that song was, but that was, like, their big hit in the early 90s. And everyone was like, no, they used to be cool.
Yeah.
They were, like, around with Husker Du and the Replacements.
Well.
That's, and I never, I couldn't
they were see. Kind of like, you know, yeah. It's like comparing Grateful Dead and Fish or something, you know. It's like, well, the Fish kind of came afterwards and kind of inherited their audience or something, but it was never the same. Always seemed like Soul Asylum was trying to kind of take over the, I don't know, I'm just gonna talk shit about them now.
Well, I equate them in my mind to Candlebox, which probably is not a good comparison.
Yeah, I another don't know one who hit wonder is. From are they like Nickelback?
They were the Nickelback of grunge.
Oh, okay. Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah.
I can totally picture them now.
They both had like one off.
The
like,
Nickelback of grunge. What is Nickelback of? Are they?
I don't know.
I've never heard them. Are they
what,
metal? I'm guessing they're metal.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. They're just no, like the butt of every joke.
Yeah, exactly. I
never felt compelled to check that one.
Poor Nickelback.
But they're still touring, Soul Asylum, apparently. And they're coming to Portland.
Yeah, okay. Oh, nice. They're a Canadian rock band. I should just for one of our episodes, just take turns reading Wikipedia to each other.
Just follow random links.
Like, yeah. Oh, look. Nickelback is a Canadian rock band from Alberta. Okay. All right. Well, maybe we should wrap this up. Who's on the show next week? No idea. Same time, same place, though. I mean, we'll be on it. I don't know who the guest is. Just going to pass the mic up and down 80 seconds. Does anybody have anything
to
say?
That wouldn't be a bad show. I would listen to that
set
show.
Set up a little like a little booth on 80 seconds like Lucy's. And or just walk from bus stop to bus stop and ask questions.
Mm-hmm. We should probably do that.
I'm trying to think of some good questions right now. Okay, well, next week, our tour of 82nd. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Ray.